people just by the words they use, by their body language? Are they an authority? Are they trying to run from you? Are they lying to you? We're going to find all that out here at Podcast 505. The venom of words, the elixir of words, do they attract or repel, or all of the above? But just understanding, just with the words they use, you can adjust your persuasive presentation. Let's get into it.
Maximize your influence. Kurt Mortensen is the author of Persuasion IQ, Laws of Charisma, and the best-selling book, Maximum Influence.
Good to have you back. Thanks for being here. Tell your family, friends, and enemies about the podcast. Hope everyone's having an awesome week, achieving their goals, becoming more persuasive and influential, learning the skills they should have learned in school, those soft skills. And training in HR this week, just the deterioration of those soft skills, especially the younger generation. They're trying to hire people that can interact, that have people skills, that have emotional intelligence. And we're not blaming them with the COVID and technology. It's just not natural as it used to be to gain those soft skills. So let's talk about some of those soft skills today. But before we do, let's get into the persuasion blunder.
Don't.
This happened to me. Still a little hurt about it. Bruised my esteem. I don't know what it was, but checking in Saudi Arabia. And they had gotten me a special ticket, so I had a special line, expecting some special service. So the line was short. That was good. And I was with the local person. We were talking, going back and forth, saying goodbye. And I put my one piece of luggage on the scale, and she started typing up, handed my passports, no questions, and then my luggage had disappeared. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. She says, you're all checked in. I'm like, you don't even know where I'm going. She says, you're all checked into Paris. I'm like, that's just my first stop. I got to get to the United States. She says, well, your bags are going to Paris. I'm like, that's not my final stop. She said, well, you're going to have to pick up your bags in Paris. I'm like, why didn't you ask me? Didn't my ticket say? And she got all offended in my face, actually yelled at me that it was my job to tell her the final destination. Maybe, but still just don't yell at me. And she got all upset at me because I didn't tell her. And people do that, right? When they do something wrong, they lash out at you. But you're not supposed to do that in a professional setting. And luckily, I had enough time to get off the plane, leave the airport, get my bag, check it back into my final destination. It was a big pain. It took me a couple hours, but that is the blunder. I'm still mad at that airline. I don't know if I'll fly that airline again, but A, in the special service line, B, making it my fault. Again, maybe it was, but you still probably shouldn't be yelling at me. C, it's kind of a cultural thing too. So we have to put that into perspective. Still a little hurt by that. It especially took me so long to fix the air. And it had to be just right there. But no, to go get it, it takes hours. You can't do it. It's gone. I'm like, I'll crawl through there and get it. And they wouldn't let me do that, obviously. That is the blunder of the week. Time for our geeky weekly scholarly article. This comes from research from Nature of Human Behavior, Brown University, and the Kearney Institute for Brain Science, and neuroscientist Harrison Ritz. So lack of focus doesn't equal lack of intelligence. It's proof of an intricate or advanced brain. And this brain research shows how parts of the brain need to work together to focus on important information while filtering out distractions. Because imagine a busy restaurant. You know, there's so much going on. There's dishes clattering. There's music. There's people talking loudly over one another. There's the food in front of you. There's things going outside the window. And they say it's a wonder that anyone in that type of environment, could be your work environment, can focus enough to have a conversation. So this new study gives us detailed insights into the brain that can help people pay attention when there's so many distractions and what to do when they can't focus. Earlier studies established that people could control how much they focus by enhancing the relevant information and how much they could filter out by tuning out the distractions. And they compared to the same way we can bring more than 50 muscles together to perform something like using chopsticks. I didn't know that took 50 muscles, but these findings can help us understand how we as humans have tremendous cognitive or mental flexibility. We can pay attention to what we want, when we want, and harness the power of our brain. So they had to do a test, a cognitive test, with the MRI machines. So they were measuring brain activity and getting the brain to work. So the participants saw a swirling mass of green and purple dots moving left and right, kind of like a swarm of fireflies. These tasks varied in difficulty, and they measured the brain activity. And they saw that different brain regions worked together when there were so many distracting things going on to focus on anywhere from the color to the number of dots to all these different things. So he goes on to say, Dr. Ritz, when people talk about the limitations of the mind, they often put in terms of humans just don't have the mental capacity or the computing power. These findings support a different perspective on why we're not focused all the time. It's not that our brains are too simple, but instead that our brains are really complicated and it's the coordination that's hard. So hopefully this gives you hope. Your brain is complicated. It can do it. You can train it. You can get better. You can focus more. It's not just something you can do as a kid. It's something you can do right now. We had another study I was reading the other day. I know, I was geeking out. Neuroinsights into human behavior. Because we have this conscious and unconscious thought process. And this number is huge, but bear with me here. They estimate, and again, here's the huge number, that our unconscious mind can process 11 million pieces of information per second compared to the 40 pieces of information that our conscious brains can process every second. Every second. So basically what that's saying is we have millions of pieces of information going into our subconscious mind, but we're only aware of 40 pieces. And again, those numbers seem high, but that helps you understand the brain and help you understand these humans you're persuading that they're not thinking creatures that feel, they're feeling creatures that think. And that brings us to our listener email.
Oh boy!
Let me know what you want to hear, questions you have at Kurt@MaximizeYourInfluence.com or go to MaximizeYourInfluence.com for your free persuasion IQ assessment, advanced training, and information on Influence University. By the way, we use anything you've submitted on the podcast, you get the free gold version of InfluenceUniversity.com. So this comes from Peter from St. Petersburg. Now, I don't know, I should find out if that's Russia, Florida, or even think there's one in Pennsylvania just north of Pittsburgh. He says, how can I get better at closing? How can I adapt to people based on the words they use or their body language? Well, let's talk about it. Peter, I call that one of the laws of persuasion, verbal packaging. That's the voice side, the word side, the body language side. We can talk a little bit about that, but let's talk about the words. So the words you use as a persuader can attract or repel. The words they use can also attract or repel, but they can also help you adapt, to pivot, to understand what they're thinking, feeling, what they're trying to do. Challenges, we're so concerned about what to say next that we're not reading the people and trying to interpret the words they are using. What's the old saying? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Yeah, right. Words can hurt. We know that. Especially now, I think we've had a shift in society to where it used to be, yeah, I don't think they meant to offend me. And now they're like, yeah, we're looking to be offended. So things have changed. We have to be very careful with the words we use and how we use them. Even if they don't mean it, things can be very offensive. What are these words that repel people, that offend? Some of these have the duh factor.
Well, duh.
Any type of criticism, judgmental words that belittle or criticize someone's actions, behavior, or character. Any type of insults, derogatory words that bruise their self-esteem. Bring these up because you're not meaning to do it, but there are words you are inserting that we'll talk about that do this. Words you use that indicate blame, assign fault, that could lead to defensiveness or even resentment. For example, maybe you're missing something off your desk and you think it's Joe. Just the words you can use can trigger defensiveness or even anger. Because if you say, hey, Joe, have you seen? Joe, did you borrow? Joe, did you take? Joe, did you steal? Will all trigger different things. They all lead to the same thing, and you're going to find out if they took it. Well, they might lie. Have you seen? Did you borrow? Did you take? Did you steal? Do you feel the difference there? And then sarcasm. I grew up with sarcasm. I love sarcasm. I'm a very sarcastic person. But it depends on how people grew up. They didn't have sarcasm in their home, their personality, even cultures. We've had a lot of exchange students around the world in our home, and some cultures are not sarcastic. They don't know how to handle it, and they take it personally. No right or wrong, just different, so you have to be careful. or anything that invalidates them or bruises their self-esteem, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Like, well, I do. You shouldn't be angry. You shouldn't be depressed. You shouldn't be afraid of flying. Any of those can invalidate them. Or any type of words or language that feel manipulative. Well, don't you agree that? Don't you feel that? Well, if you don't understand that, that can cross the line just a little bit. Now, with that, let's just talk about a little body language here. The eye roll. You're less than a human. You're dumber than a stump. We've talked about that. One of my favorite authors is Arthur Brooks. He talks about gross national happiness. He talks about how contempt is one of the big challenges of society now. It's okay to get angry. Let's fight it out. Let's work it through in a civilized manner. But contempt is, no, I'm 100% right. You're 100% wrong. You're dumb. There's no way I'm going to listen to you. And it's that eye roll. So if you're getting the eye roll, you've probably crossed the line. You're not getting through, or they're not accepting you as a human being. And that would probably be a good sign to go. So as you learn to read the language that people are using, you can find out about their authority status. If they feel that they're above you or below you, you can understand their personality better. I mean, take the airlines, for example. They're the best at verbally packaging their words. In the event of a water landing, really. In case of cabin depressurization, mechanical difficulties instead of broke. But they also don't say, sit down and buckle up. They're like, please take your seat. Please buckle up. So they do ask nicely. When someone says, you need to get this done versus we need to get this done, that's a pretty good parenting or management tip. Even if you have nothing to do with it, you say, we need to get this done by Friday. That's more persuasive and you get less resistance than you need to get this Friday. But you can read a lot in a situation when they say, you need to get this done by Friday. Sometimes you can peg authority position or personality if they apologize before. Well, you're not going to like this. Or one that I use. Hey, do you want me to sugarcoat this? In negotiation, we teach if they're not going to make the first offer and they want you to go first, you say, okay, well, I didn't want to go first. I didn't want to offend you. Is it okay if I go? So they can apologize or ask you a question ahead of time or put it in a form of question instead of you get this done by Friday. Hey, can you get this done by Friday? Or something like, hey, can I ask you for a favor? Are all different things you can listen for so you can read the situation and pivot and adapt and adjust. Another one you can understand them a little bit better is how they use silence. In negotiation especially, the more silence they use can indicate that they feel they're in the power position. Or on the body language side, you can just look at their chin. Most humans, most cultures, when people feel sorry they've done something wrong, their chin goes down. When they're feeling a little defiant, a little arrogant, their chin will go up, especially with males. In fact, watch when guys meet other guys, when their chin goes up, sign of respect, their chin goes down. It's like, you better respect me. Not 100%. Take a look at it. Kind of an interesting gesture to look for. So listen for those clues. If they're trying to distance from you, they're done with you, they've emotionally withdrawn from you, you can see it in their body language, but sometimes they cover up their body language. Listen to the words. You might hear weasel words. Talk about this at Maximum Influence. A weasel is a little animal that sneaks into a chicken coop, finds an egg, and it sucks out everything from an egg but leaves the empty hollow egg. So a weasel word's a vague, hollow word. Maybe, probably, I guess. Well, some people say, you're like, who are these people? Or some studies show, you're like, what studies? Well, some suggest that. Many believe, many experts say, you're like, all right, who is that? It might, possibly, could, almost, approximately, hopefully, are all weasel words. That could be a sign they're trying to get rid of you. Or any type of disclaimer. These are qualifiers that minimize the importance of what's being said. Well, I'm not sure, but I'm not an expert, but one big one you can look for is the personal pronoun. So when they quit using I, we, you, and they're vague, that could be a sign of distancing and they're ready to run and they've tuned out. Or someone that's always changing the topic from personal or emotional topics. Maybe you can see it in the responses. They're very brief. Yes, no. You can read their language when it's non-committal. They're not making promises. Oh, I'll see what we can do. I'll think about it. Let me get with my staff. Now, those could be true, but most of the time, they're trying to get rid of you. Now, on the body language sign, just avoidance of eye contact. Especially that moment when the objection comes up and it's not a real objection. They just look away for a second. Look at the eyes. They'll tell you a lot what's going on inside. Another point. Understand that proper language varies from setting to setting, from event to event, from country to country. One word choice does not work in every circumstance. Because you have to take a look at the word. Are you trying to push? You're trying to pull? You're trying to get your point across? You're trying to be nice? Word choice could be critical to diffusing situations or getting people to accept your point of view. Talked about it, even one word can make the difference between rejection and acceptance. Interesting study by social psychologist Harold Kelly. Students were given a list of qualities describing a guest speaker they were about to listen to. Each student read from either one of the following two lists: cold, industrious, critical, practical, and determined. The other group, warm, industrious, critical, practical, and determined. All the words were the same, of course, except the first word in one list was cold, in one word was warm. Of course, the students who read the first one, cold, had less than positive feelings about the speaker. They found that the first word on the front of the list conditioned how the students felt in reading through the rest of the list. It didn't matter that none of the following words were negative. Just reading the word cold tainted how the students read the rest of the list. So I was on this flight back when they used to feed you. This flight attendant had run out of steak as an option for dinner. Instead of telling the customers their only option was chicken, the flight attendant said, "Look, you could have a piece of marinated chicken breast sautéed in mushrooms in a light cream sauce, or a piece of beef." I added that for emphasis. But anyway, they chose the chicken because it sounded better. Sales professionals always use their words carefully. They know that one wrong word can send their prospect's mind somewhere else and lose the sale. Remember we talked about contract? No paperwork. Cancellation policy? Well, we do have a right of rescission. Are you on commission? Well, there's a fee built in for my services. How much does it cost? Let's talk about the investment. You don't ask for their credit card. It's a form of payment. You're not the most expensive. You're top of the line. You're not the cheapest. You're more economical. No one likes to set an appointment. How about a time to drop by? Time to visit. Here's a fun study. People were asked if they had headaches frequently or occasionally. When you said frequently, it was 2.2 headaches a week. Occasionally, it was less than one a week. Then you have the opposite, the pharmaceutical companies. They portray all these wonderful benefits of this pill. Then at the end of the commercial, when they have to run through all the negative side effects, vomiting and headaches, they read through these negatives quickly using a monotone voice, the same pace, at a fast rate. Those negative consequences don't hit the radar. Now, what about the words you're using? Keep them simple. Simple words are more persuasive. The only time we've seen that complex, hard words can be persuasive is when you're the expert witness at a jury trial. Even changing the word repair to fix, fix is simpler, had a bump in marketing response. So be clear, be specific, be precise. Watch the acronyms. Just know that a confused mind says no. Keep your words positive. So words that are positive, encourage, uplifting, that motivate, can help you with persuasion and influence. Try words that are more empathetic. You're like, what do you mean? Well, for example, when I say I'm sorry, that's not as empathetic as I apologize, which is not as empathetic as, hey, I really appreciate you waiting that 30 minutes when I was late. Sorry, better than nothing, but that's not as persuasive as I apologize and thanks for waiting. You can use words to show them that you're listening. I understand. Tell me more. Thanks for telling me that. And of course, use words that are more persuasive. Not contract, paperwork. Not let me transfer you to sales, let me transfer you to a consultant. Every word you use can attract or repel. I mean, think about it. We're not going to fire you. It's downsizing. You don't say, let me dumb it down for you. Let me simplify. You don't say you're a liar. You might say you misrepresented the facts. How about instead of failure, incomplete success? Now, language and word cues can depend on culture, individual differences, profession, but they can serve as indicators to someone's emotional state, level of comfort. Are they engaged? Are they trying to distance from you? recognize these, listen for these, get better at these. So that's a wrap. Thanks for being here. All the links and references will be under podcast 505 under Maximize Your Influence. There'll also be a link to get your special discount to influenceuniversity.com. That's pretty much everything I've done, from seminars to videos to audios to books to the 52-week advanced program to the library. It's usually a monthly membership, but now you get access to everything, lifetime membership for $97. Check it out. Become more influential. Become a better leader. Learn to read people. Listen to those word cues and go out and persuade with power.